Accession number 30651, Mr. Bill Ralston, Real 11.
So I said, no, I can't have. I said, I was taking Paladrine tablets all the time I was there. So I said, what's Paladrine tablets? I said, what the army gave you? I said, for to fight off malaria. I said, there's not been a day that I've missed. So they said, well, we're convinced you've got it. Anyhow, it was very, very hot then, and we were having a heat wave. And went home, remember, I was coming back the next day and got on the bus. I had my brother's overcoat. Everybody's walking around baking alive, and I had a scarf on. And I was sitting on the bus next to my mother. She was coming with me, and I was literally shaking. And she said, if you don't keep still, she said, you're driving me mad shaking like that. She said, you've got, I can remember, Servitus Dance. She said, is what you've got. She said, I'll give you a bleeding good wallop if you don't keep still. Anyhow, I went in to the hospital, and I did have it. And I was in there a couple of weeks. And, of course, having a tropical disease, all the nurses were running round me, especially the trainee nurses, because they wanted it for their exam. To fill it all in, like, you know, and asking me questions. Anyway, I went out, was out a little while, and then Tatton Lowell's had their own dentist. And I went to have a check-up, and he said, you've got a fill-in to have. So went back to another appointment, and he put the needle in. He said, go and sit outside. And I went back in the dentist chair, and the shakes started coming again. So he said to me, you've never been frightened before. Are you really frightened? So I said to him, no. I said, just do it quick. I said, I'll go home. I've got malaria coming on. Oh, he said, have you? Well, the next thing I know, I was awake. I was out, went out in the chair, and I woke up, and I got blankets around me, two electric fires, and I could hear bells ringing. And ambulances in them days used to have a bell instead of the klaxon that they got now. And I could hear that. They whipped me away again. And this was getting near now, right, to November. And we were getting married. And the nurses were rubbing their hands together that they were going to have a wedding in the church. Right? You know, they wanted me to keep in there. But anyhow, I got out on the Friday, as we got married on the Saturday, but it was okay.
Did it come back again? Did it come back a
lot? I had it quite a lot. I used to be a blood donor, and I used to stamp it on the bottle, like big words, malaria. I still used to take the blood, like, you know, and I gave it for about 10 years, I think, like, and then till I had a heart attack, and they stopped doing it then.
Now, what about your back and your pelvis?
Yeah.
Any trouble with them?
No, I think it is arthritis in it now, like, you know. But I've done everything, like, you know, since I've run London Marathon 13 times. I've run everywhere. Like, I used to run home from London twice, three times a week. I've done everything, and I don't let it bother me. I've thought just recently, about 4 years ago, I'd had prostate cancer 10 years ago, and I thought that it was arthritis, so I was getting in the base of my spine. And they found out then that I had cancer of the spine. So I've had treatment for that, and hopefully it's, you know, it's going to be okay.
Now, what was your work career? Did you carry on working at Tate & Lyle?
No, I worked there for a while, and then I went and worked for the PLA. I became a docker. And then I was a shop steward in the Port of London, like, but people thought that all shop stewards were communists. And I used to say, "You've really got the wrong boy here, because I'm no communist." Like, I said, "They've messed my life up enough." I've had people come down. I had quite a reputation of being fairly militant, only for the people I represented. I didn't have no political beliefs or nothing like that, but the management, like, knew that I would fight tooth and nail to get better conditions for the people who I represented. I was one of the youngest ones in there, and when Enoch made his most famous speech of, you know, the streets of London going to be running with blood, I was helped organise the Big Dock strike for that. But it wasn't nothing racialist. All we were concerned about was that someone was being denied the right for freedom of speech in the House of Commons. But once I got involved with it at breakfast time one morning with a man named Harry Pearman. And of course, when the communist element in Dockland, they got poked their nose in, and it then became something else. And my boss from them days, he still phones me now. He finished up the director of the Port of London, and he wrote me a card. And he said, you know, he passed comment on, I think it was 40 years ago, last month or something, this month, that the anniversary, and he said, "I was so proud of you that you done what you did." He said, "Because I couldn't do it." And when I've talked to him now, I said, "But why did you argue against what I was doing?" He said, "Because I had to, by the position I was holding in the Port of London." He said, "I had to be seen holding up the principles of the Port of London, not the principles of freedom of speech," right, you know. And the two of them, I speak to two of my bosses regular.
And so that was your career, a docker, but mainly a shop steward, I presume.
Yeah, and then I became a foreman. Yeah, and then I became a foreman, and then I think it was only a foreman for a very short while, and I became a shop steward then for the foreman. I enjoyed my whole life with the PLA. I thought it was a wonderful living, and of course, I suppose when I was a shop steward and when I was a foreman, there was no manual work. It was more or less talking and arguing and things like that. So then I left there, and I worked for Coutts Bank, Queen's Bank.
What has?
I went there. They offered me a job on the security side, and I wouldn't take it because of shift work and that, working weekends, 24-hour night work and what have you. And I said, "No, you're wasting your time. I want a job where I'm going to stay for the rest of my life." And they said, "Well, we've offered you this job because you've earned fabulous money. You was earning more money than a bank manager as a foreman in the dock." So I said, "Well, I don't want that sort of job. I don't want nothing with responsibility anymore. I want a quiet life." So he said, "How would you like to be a messenger?" So I said, "Yeah, that's because this is what I wanted. I didn't want no hassle in life. I'd had a heart attack when I was 38 in the port." So I'd done that for a while. And then after a little while, they asked me if I'd like to be the chairman chauffeur. And I said, "Yeah. I'd love that job, like, you know." and I took that job on. And whilst I was working there, I got sent for by Newham Council. And the leader of the council, a gentleman named Jack Hart, he interviewed me and said he was going to nominate me to become Justice of the Peace. So I said, yeah, okay. So he said, I don't want you to tell anyone. So I said, well, it don't work that way with me. So he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'll go home, my wife's going to say to me, what did they want? And what do you think I'm going to say to her? Nothing. So I said, I'm going to be honest and tell her what you wanted. And I said, I'm the employer. And I went through all the checks and all that, and I got it, and I was sworn in at Snaresbrook Crown Court. And Coates thought it was the most wonderful thing that you could ever have. Except one person in the personnel, he said to me, you won't get that, you're not a bank manager, you're only a messenger. And the guy who was in charge of us, a man named Bob Yarwood, when this personnel manager went out, he said to me, if you don't get that, he said, after what's been said to you, he said, I'll make your life a misery here. He said, you've got to get it. So as it can stuff it up his nose, like, you know. And I did get it, and Coates were very, very supportive to me. And if I used to pick it, the chairman up, like, Sir David Money Coates, first thing he used to say to all his colleagues, this is my driver, Bill, he's a magistrate, you know, so don't say anything you don't want him to hear.
Did you enjoy being a magistrate?
Very, very much so. I didn't think I'd enjoy taking people's liberty away. And I was a bit worried the first time I ever done this. And I done it with a girl, a foreign girl. She was stealing old women's purses. And they were all really, really old women. And I thought to myself, she wants to go away for as long as you could possibly put her away, like. But it was only, the limit was 6 months. And we worked it so she got a week for the first one, like, and blah, blah, blah. So as every one she was charged with, she had a string of them, like. And we could then put her away for the full amount. And I always thought I'd worry about doing it, but I thought I'd done the public a service, like, by doing her away. And I was quite proud of it, like, you know. I went home, I said to my wife, I've put someone away for 6 months. Oh, she said, and don't it worry you? So I said, no. I said, I thought it would, because she knew I was a bit concerned about this. I said, no, I said, I'm really pleased. And when I told her, and the oldest one of these women was 93, I think it was, I said, and I kept that one till last, like, you know, and give her 6 months for that. And it didn't worry me then, like, you know. I think I've visited every prison in the south of England, women's prisons. I've been to Bullwood Hall, that's out at Essex, Holloway, you name it, I think I've been to them. Hollersley Bay is a big one up in the...
So how long did you do it for? When did you start?
About 21 years.
So from when to when, roughly?
Well, I was 70, so I suppose it was about 48, 49, something like that.
And you stopped when you were 70?
No, I was involved in a big case, really big case, and with, I better not mention, well, I don't think you should mention this guy's name.
No, probably not.
He was Mr. Fix-It. That tells you what his name is, I suppose. He used to fix for everyone who had pots and pots of money, and there was a world renowned sportsman. And he was involved in it, in the case, and he said I was homophobic. Well, I'd never heard of the word homophobic at that stage. I said I winked at the press. And I said, I don't wink at the press. I said, any man who winks at another man in East London is known as being gay. Gay. I said, no, I'm not gay. And he's jumped straight up and he said, you're homophobic. The paper's got it. Before I knew when I got home here, I was on the 6 o'clock news. I was in every newspaper. I went back to court the next day. There was all the press and television cameras waiting for me, and I just ignored them all and walked straight by them. And I had a letter then from the Lord Chancellor's office asking me to relinquish responsibility for the case, and I wouldn't. And I kept on, and that's how they said the Lord got a phone call from the Chancellor's office that they convened a meeting to see if I was homophobic. And so anyhow, I had a lengthy discussion with the clerk of the court, and I decided I'd stand down.
So when was that?
About just over 5 years ago.
So about 2003.
Yeah.
And you've done it for 20 years.
Yeah.
So about 1983, you know. Mm.
Yeah, roughly about that time.
And that was the end of it, was it?
No. I had to go and I stood down and then they suspended me, stopped me from sitting. And I was going to have to go to the Chancellor's office. I went to Lord Chancellor's courts committee, interviewed by them. I've always been an honest person. I decry lies. I hate lies. And I told them everything to the best of my ability. And whilst it was going on, I then went to Broomfield Hospital. And that's the day they diagnosed I had cancer in my spine. And my son was there and he said, Dad, just forget about all this other thing with the courts because I attempted suicide, contemplated suicide on two occasions over it. Twice. And my wife took me to the doctor when she realised what was happening. And my own GP, he gave me his mobile number, he gave me his home number, he gave it to my wife and said, you've got to get this out of your mind, What I was concerned with, all the years from when I came out of the forces, I was involved in a lot with youth of Newham. And that guy destroyed me, I felt my character, just by saying that. And it really, it got to me. And on one occasion, the Brentwood police were informed that there might be someone trying to get at me, The press were phoning my grandchildren up to get stories.
So all in all, it was a horrid time for you.
It was the worst time of my life.
Now, I forgot to ask you, what about the TA? Did you do any TA service?
Yeah. TA service, I done, I think it was called London Pride or something. It was, I was a driver to the CO there. I went down to Crookham and learnt to drive one of these SPs, they call them, self-propelled guns, couple of weekends. And he was a typical 39, 45 officer sort of thing. What he wanted, he had. If he wanted your Jeep and he was in the tank, he'd say, you take my tank and I'm having the Jeep. And he'd say to me, get out, Bill, and get in the Jeep. Or he would do it vice versa, so I had to be able to drive everything. Really nice man. And the 56th Armoured Division was all going to move, all on Salisbury Plain, without the help of MPs or anyone, just with the regiments themselves. It was all going to be done in the dark. And because I had the CO's Jeep, I've now got to take that the lead regiment over Salisbury Plains. And I think there must have been two trees on Salisbury Plains, and I was driving along in the dark, and the Jeep just wouldn't go. And I caught on a big bough of a tree at the top, but it was fun. But then another night, the infantry and everybody from the Armoured Division were going to make cross a river and do various manoeuvres and one thing and another. And so now we've got to cross with him. And me being his driver radio operator, and we had another radio operator in with him. So we said to him, it's silly you getting in the water, like we're going to have to cross a river. So it's silly you going in the river, sir. You might as well stay here and you drive the Jeep up and meet us. We'll carry the radios and all that. He said, no, 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 no. He said, I go in the river, you stay in the dry. And he was a bank manager, he was. I don't know what bank it was. But he insisted, and me and his other signaller were sitting cosy in the Jeep with our overcoats wrapped round us. And on the morning time, I shot back to, I think it was Lark Hill we were stationed at. And we were stationed with the Royal Honourable Artillery Company from Westminster. Not Westminster, Finsbury Square. And we shot back and went to see his batman, like, and said, give us some dry clothes. He's been up to his chest, armpits in water all night long. So he gave us some clothes. He said, you better give us a bottle of brandy for him as well. And so we took it, and oh, he was an out and out thorough gentleman. Never met a nicer guy, like. And you have to fill in a form to get your petrol, a work ticket or something. And I said to him, I've never done nothing like this. I said, I don't understand it. I said, you'll have to get someone to explain it to me. He said, don't explain nothing to you. He said, I don't want you to have the worry of a thing like that. He said, give it to me, he said, and I'll tell the POL point. He said that you'll fill up for petrol and I'll sign for it after. Out and out, gentlemen.
So how long were you with them for? Just a couple of years?
A couple of years, yeah, and it stopped.
You didn't stay on after?
No, no.
So 53 to 54?
Yeah, 53, 50, say 55 at the max, right, you know.
Now, what about your, what are you a member of? Are you a member of any association? Let's take the one I know you are, British Korean
Veteran.
War Veterans.
Yeah, and a Brentwood British Legion.
Well, tell me about, firstly, the Korean War Veterans. Why are you a member of them? What do you get out of them?
What do you get out of them? You get comradeship. You get a chance to exchange. Everybody talks about good times here and laughs, the laughs they've had. You don't get no one talking about this happened badly to me, that happened. If someone's got wounded or been shot, something with others happened, a bit shrapnel wounds, they always got a funny to tell you about it. Like, you know, I went yesterday and Bill Parr, he was in the Black Watch and he got wounded a couple of times, I think, Bill. And he was talking about the funny side of being in hospital, like, you know, and funny side about MPs grabbing hold of him and one thing. Then the police because he was walking with a walking stick. Policeman started having a go at him and hit the policeman with a walking stick. You know, you get some really funny stories come out there.
Now, you haven't been back to Korea with them, though. Why,
no.
Why is that?
Cost. I wouldn't go back. It's okay, the cost, for me. I could, you know, you could stand that, but I wouldn't go back without my wife. And she insists that I should go back. The children's at me, Dad, go back. You've got the money as well to take, Mum. But I think it's a lot of money, like, you know, and time you go there and the money you're going to spend. She keeps saying to me now, like, you've got to go back. You've got to go back. And I said, I'll only go if you come with me. And just never gone. I went to, when the World Cup was on in Korea and Japan, we buried the British and the Korean ambassador held some big do up at the Barbican. And there was loads of people from big businesses. And one guy was something to do with Korean Airlines, and he said to me, go back. He said, come and get in touch with me, like, at my office. And he gave me his card. He said, and I'll get you cheap flights for you and your wife. But no, I've never gone back. I've got the desire is there, but it's just costs.
Now, what about the British Legion? Is that important to you?
Yeah, but it's nice, but it can't hold a candle to North East London branch for the BKVA. That is something special. I really mean that. You know, I've been to... I can give you an example. We went up to the National Arboretum and we were sitting down having something to eat when we got there. And
this is with the...
BKVA. And Barry come in, he said...
this is Barry Summerfield.
Barry Summerfield, yeah. He said, they want someone to carry the standard for Kent Branch. So he said, who's going to do it? So... No, everyone looks, no volunteers, it's a typical army. No one of volunteers. They said to me, how about you, Bill? So I said, I'll only do it if you can't get someone. I said, go on as a last resort. So anyhow, I'm sure Barry walked out the door and stood there, counted to 10 and come back and said, I can't get anyone. So we've got the national standard bearer in our branch, Malcolm, I forget his surname, and he said, Malcolm, I said, I don't know the drill, what you do with a standard, so he said, I'll get Malcolm to show you. So I had Malcolm come in, so he said, Bill, we'll go through it all in the morning, okay, so it's fresh in your mind for the day. So I said, yeah, okay, when in the morning? He said, 6 o'clock in the car park. I said, what? 6 o'clock in the car park? He said, yeah. Of course, he's out there drilling me on what to do with this standard. And when we look, there's all the other members of the branch all hanging out their windows, and they were chai-hiking the two of us, like, you know. And it was all good banter, like, really was. There was nothing hurtful or nothing sort of thing. And I think that it was a big parade. I don't know, it was 50 years of the Korean War or something like that. And I thought it was an honour. You know, at the finish, there was about 50, 60 standards, like, you know, all up there. And I enjoyed that. Yeah, and I've been to... Kingston upon Thames with them.
So it's something really worthwhile to you.
Yeah, it means a lot to me, like, you know, when I get there with them.
Thank you very much.